everybody, this is Martin Zender, and I am on the road. I am in Elizabethton, Tennessee, and I'm here at the home of Ed and Joy Smelzer. And I've been meaning to come here for about 3 or 4 years. I've been in contact with a lot of these great folks here in Tennessee for a long time, and I've threatened them that I'm going to come visit them, and they didn't believe me, and yet here I am. And so I'm on my way eventually to Faith, North Carolina this weekend. So if you haven't got your tickets yet, tickets are still on sale. Well, actually, you can just wander into the Potter's House Fellowship in Faith, North Carolina. Just go to my homepage, martinzender.com, and you'll see all the information, all the juicy information that we're going to be teaching in Faith. So it's not too late. Try to get down there. And I'm going to join some fellowship here in Tennessee for a few days, and I'm going to head there, and I'm going to meet Clyde and the gang, and Dan Sheridan's going to be coming in too. So we're going to have a great time. Hope to see you there. So we're talking about the Lost Ten Tribes of Israel, trying to make it practical to you to help you understand what God is doing. There was a big civil war at the end of the reign of Solomon, and the nation of Israel split in two. Why would God do that? I thought God was all about unity. Well, what did Jesus say? He came to bring a sword sometimes, and we see families split up, and I don't like it. But God is in the business of separating right now, and he had a purpose. But don't despair over that, because he's going to bring everything back. And we're going to see that in Ezekiel chapter 37, how God is going to bring everything back to himself. But first, how can you bring things back to you that aren't first separated? So the separation is of God, and the reunion is of God, just like the sexes in the Garden of Eden. He separated the sexes, and then the reunion is pretty sweet. It is. You know, when you bring the sexes back together, that's a good thing. So God's in the business of doing that. And again, you can't leave the movie in the middle. If you leave the movie in the middle, you're going to miss the epic conclusion. If you leave the movie Rocky in the middle of Rocky, you're going to think he's a stupid bum from Philadelphia. He can't do nothing right. Hey, Mick. But then when you watch it to the end, you see the great victory, and you hear that great song. It sounds something like that, not exactly like that. Don't quote me, but that's what God's doing with Israel. So I left you. I left off with you on in Ezekiel 36. To recap, son of man, when the house of Israel was living in their own land, they defiled it. We're talking about the house of Israel in Ezekiel 36. And then we see that God in verse 24 of Ezekiel 36, he's going to gather Israel from all the nations where she was sent. And that tells you that in the end times, Israel is not going to be in the land. They're going to be scattered, and they probably will have lost their identity, thus the lost 10 tribes of Israel. They won't know they're Israelites. So the world's going to be stunned, okay? I think yesterday I talked to you about God's going to put his spirit within Israel, all these active verbs. I'm going to put my spirit, cause you to walk in my statutes. And then Israel's going to remember. That's what I talked to you about yesterday. Now it's coming back to me. You're going to remember your evil ways and your deeds that were not good, and you will loathe yourselves in your own sight for your iniquities and your abominations. I told you this is going to happen on a national level with Israel, and it happens on a personal level with us sometimes. We're just talking with some folks tonight. We had a nice little dinner and a fellowship, and God is eventually going to bring every person to the end of themselves. I mean, some tragic thing, maybe not horrifically tragic, but we all had to come to the end of ourselves to realize that this salvation of ours is all of God. It takes a crisis in your life. Nobody gets this truth while they're walking through the daffodils on a sunny summer afternoon. You always get this on the heels of being broken, and God does that on an individual level, and he's going to do it with Israel on a national level. And verse 33, thus says the Lord God, on the day I cleanse you from all your iniquities, I will cause the cities to be inhabited and the waste places to be rebuilt. And the desolate land will be cultivated instead of being a desolation in the sight of everyone who passed by. Israel's now a desolation. It's a dirty, stinky, disgusting little piece of real estate in the Middle East. People there are unbelievers. And after the tribulation, after this great trial, trauma that this earth's going to endure, this land, the earth is going to look like a wasteland. It's going to look like nuclear bombs have gone off. And it's quite possible that nuclear bombs will have gone off. But God is going to make the desolate land, listen to this, verse 35, the desolate land has become like the Garden of Eden, and the waste desolate, and the ruined cities are fortified and inhabited. God's going to shock everybody when you see what he's going to do. He's going to make this desolate wasteland like the Garden of Eden. That's what it says here. That's remarkable. It's always, well, I was raised in Ohio, so I know about hard winters. We had that Lake Erie up there, and it caused all kinds of grim weather patterns. And I remember in the winter, our yard would just be covered with ice, totally coated. The grass would be frozen, the remnants of the grass. And it's like, there's no way this could ever come to life again. And winter and summer, winter and spring are a demonstration by God that we endure every year. That is, if you live north of Daytona Beach. If you live north of Daytona Beach, you're screwed. Sorry. You have to, even in Florida, you have to go south of Daytona Beach to get true guarantee no snow and ice. Okay, but anyway, back to Ohio. So I thought there's no way spring can come. You just can't imagine how it could happen. Everything's dead. Nothing moves. And then somehow spring comes and the flowers pop up. And it's like a miracle every year. That's God speaking to us. The heavens declare his handiwork, and the regeneration of the earth every spring is a declaration that God can bring, when it seems impossible, he can bring life out of death. That's what he's going to do to Israel, because at the end of this eon, Israel is going to, you hear about the Battle of Armageddon? The nations are going to be gathered against Israel, and everything is going to be against Israel. I mean, look how Israel has been decimated over the years, and by some miracle, this nation exists. Hitler tried to kill her off, couldn't do it. Rome tried to kill her off in 70 AD, couldn't do it. They were scattered, they returned. There's a remnant that returned to the land. I mean, somehow, it's been a grim miracle. And there's you're barely hanging on sometimes with God, personally and nationally with Israel. But that's the way God always does it. He makes it so it looks impossible. That is step number one. Apply that to anything you're going through right now. And I'm telling you, the best place you can be is when God takes you to the end of it. And I don't know why it takes this, but it always does. You get to the end of it and you say, I'm finished. Ah, yeah, that's correct. You're finished. And at that point, God does his work. And that's what's going to happen with Israel. He's going to take these waste cities, the desolate ruin that the earth will be at the end of this eon, and he's going to revive it, and he's going to revive the nation. So then, look what happens then, after God does this, then the nations that are left round about you will know that I, the Lord, have rebuilt the ruined places and planted that which was desolate. I, the Lord, have spoken and will do it. You know, I'm a big guy on this, that when the Lord speaks it, he will do it. And people mock him because they're looking. This is the middle of the movie. Well, we're kind of getting to the end of the movie, but they're looking at the way things are now. Well, God has obviously forsaken his people. Well, you don't know God very well. He's waiting till the measures are, till the people are desperate. He's waiting till everything looks lost. And all the great movies you've ever seen, like Rocky, the one I just mentioned, when everything's lost, every movie, I don't care what it is, Star Wars, Rocky, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Mary Poppins, I think. Everything looks grim and done. You remember Mr. Banks gets fired from the bank? Remember that part in Mary Poppins? So every movie, every director, every writer of a movie knows that you have to bring the audience to a low point. You go, how will the heroine get out of this? How will Indy get out of this pit of snakes? How is Rocky going to rise from the slums of Philadelphia? And it always happens in a good movie. The hero and the heroine rise. Where do they get this stuff? They get it from God. God is the original Shakespeare. He's the original Spielberg. He has written the most incredible, impossible, stunning script you can imagine. You're living it today. I'm living it today, and the nation Israel is living it. Do not look at Israel and think she's finished. Do not. It's going to get even worse. And I'm not a prophet, I'm not a genius, I just have read scripture, and I know that things are going to look worse and worse for Israel. But when you see what God's going to do, now we're going to get into details, because when you see what God's going to do with Israel, again, this is for his glory. He loves to shock people. And when he brings the true Israel out of hiding, that's what I'm telling you here, is that the true Israel is in hiding. The 10 tribes were scattered. They've lost their national identity. I told you that guy from Iowa came from England, and the people from England came probably from the lost 10 tribes that were scattered all over the land, and according to Amos 9:9, and this guy's an Israelite, and God's going to call the true Israel into the land, and he's going to toss out the imposters, and the earth's going to be stunned, because it will seem as though God has been finished with his people. That's what the preterists say today, and I'm always talking about that. God is not finished. When it looks at the worst, then that's when God likes it. That's when it gets good. So then the nations will know that I, the Lord, have spoken, and I will do it. Verse 37, thus says the Lord God, this also I will let the house of Israel ask me to do for them. I will increase their men like a flock, like the flock for sacrifices, like the flock at Jerusalem during her appointed feasts. So will the waste cities be filled with flocks of men. Then they will know that I am the Lord. Why does the Lord do this? He's doing it for his own namesake. He's not going to promise something and then not do it. Verse 37, this is an epic, epic chapter. I'm just going to start it today and then I'm going to finish it tomorrow. This is how it starts. This is Ezekiel. I told you about these prophets. None of these prophets asked to be a prophet. They were, as Paul says, the offscouring of all things. They were not famous. If you saw Ezekiel, you would turn your head. If you saw Isaiah, if you saw Jeremiah, these men lived in caves. John the Baptist, who announced the Messiah, he's eating honey and wild locusts in the wilderness. These are where you're going to find the men and women of God. In the book of Hebrews that we're purportedly studying, you find out people who gave up their property, who allowed themselves to be persecuted. They were treated as aliens, as expatriates upon this earth, because they were. They're seeking for a city and a country that's not here. Their city and country is in another place, and you can't expect to be treated any better than your master. We were just talking about this today at dinner too. Look at Jesus Christ. He had no home here. He had no place to lay his head. The Son of God came to earth and did not have a regular home after he began his public ministry. And he was hated by the religious elite, the establishment. He had a handful of ne'er-do-well friends. He was accused of being a drunkard, glutton, friend of sinners. And you expect to be treated any better than your master? That's the template, folks. That's the Messiah. And look at Paul. So, you want to be a great person of God, you're going to be treading the path of suffering. That's all there is to it. There's no other way. I wish there was. If there was, I'd patent it and bottle it and sell it to you. There's no other way. But this life is short compared to what we're coming into. The hand of the Lord was upon me. This is Ezekiel. Epic words, and yet this guy was probably in a cave when he wrote this. All right? Scraping ants off the wall. The hand of the Lord was upon me. You know where John got the revelation? He was in exile. This is a side issue. The Apostle John was on the island of Patmos in exile. And he saw a vision open up. And the Lord himself showed him things that would happen in the future. I don't think he showed him what would happen. I think John saw the things happening. He saw the things happening. He could have seen you. He could have seen me. He saw the Son of Man sitting on his throne. He saw the 24 elders gathered before him. And where was he? He was probably sitting on a rock all by himself. And if Don Bast is listening to this, Don Bast of Sudbury, Ontario, I remember, sir, sitting with you on a rock in Sudbury, Ontario in 1995. And you were extremely depressed. You remember that? And you were going through a hell of a hard time. And I've been through some hard times since then. I can relate to you now. I maybe couldn't then. And we sat on a big rock in the middle of nowhere. You remember? I couldn't believe, as I traveled up northern Canada, I seemed like I was going off the map. And we sat on a rock out there. And you know what? The God of the universe was with us. And that's where the greatest things happen. Sitting on a rock with one other person, talking to a friend. It doesn't happen in the church. It doesn't happen at these gigantic so-called temples of worship. It happens in humble places. So Ezekiel is getting a revelation in chapter 37 here. And I'm going to take this up with you tomorrow. And I want you to know through this that God has not forsaken you. It feels like you're alone. You're not. You have some good company. You have the company of Ezekiel, my friend in the cave. You have the company of John the Baptist, who's out eating locusts and honey in the wilderness. You have the company of John, the great John of Revelation, who was sitting on a rock by himself and saw heaven opened up. Sometimes this is as good as it gets for now. but the sequel is awesome.